When it comes to doing something that's good for your health, does it help you to know that there's a credible scientific evidence backing that up, that a practice is good for you? Can that provide extra motivation to take something on board? Scientific evidence is growing about the effect that meditation can have on our minds and our bodies. Erica Vowles spoke with a neuroscientist and a meditation teacher to find out what this evolving area of research means for our daily lives and what we can do if we hit a snag during meditation practice.
Sitting down, take a comfortable position, let your hands rest on your legs and close your eyes, and I would invite you to just breathe and keep the attention to one single thing, just monotask, and be conscious of the breathing.
It can be really hard to slow down, take a breath, even laugh sometimes. So, some turn to meditation and mindfulness. That's what Belgian neuroscientist Stephen Lauwers did.
Thoughts will pop up. Notice that and you bring the attention back to your breathing. Do two more. That is excellent.
That actually was excellent. But it takes time. And then there's that other voice that says, is this doing anything? Stephen really thinks it is.
Hello, my name is Stephen Lauwers. I'm a neurologist, work in the University Hospital in Liège, Belgium. And I'm a brain scientist leading the GIGA Consciousness Research Unit at the University of Liège, but also and currently at the University Laval in Canada.
But about a decade ago, neuroscientist Stephen Lauwers was not convinced about the benefits of mindfulness and meditation, not at all. Then he went through an unexpected divorce.
You're absolutely right. It's actually when I defended my PhD on consciousness and the brain and a journalist asking me, well, Professor Lauwers, what do you think about mindfulness? And as a scientist, I checked the scientific papers at the time. And in the book, you see this graph of how many things changed in the past two decades. And I wasn't convinced at the time, and a lot has changed since. And mainly because I went through a, let's call it, personal crisis. That was 2012. And also because I met Mathieu Ricard. He's a Buddhist monk. And he was in Paris giving a talk on meditation. And I was there talking about brain damage and consciousness. And he invited me to a retreat, which opened a new world for me. And I invited him as a guinea pig in our lab and saw with my own eyes how meditation changes your brain. It was quite obvious the stress I was in and, you know, the little voice in my head, and we all know that, was turning around and around and keeping me from falling asleep and was projecting the future and seeing catastrophic scenarios. How am I going to manage this? And I was drinking, smoking, and sleeping pills and antidepressants. And I wasn't the daddy and the inspiring father I wanted to be. So yoga was for me the first discovery. But then, yes, it was meeting with now my good friend, Mathieu Ricard. He's the translator of the Dalai Lama, who also is a scientist in molecular biology. And that really changed my opinion.
Stephen Lauwers has since remarried and become involved in researching the effects of meditation on the brain. He's also written a book, the No Nonsense Meditation Book, a look at the science with simple meditation methods and tips, and a simple message, do what you can. And Stephen will meditate while cooking or while catching public transport, even running. But even he admits that his first attempts at meditation were pretty challenging.
I remember 2013 when I was at Mind and Life Europe, the first retreat they organized. I felt a little bit like being an amateur at the Olympics with all these, you know, marathon runners. And when these monks would hit the gong and there you sit with just your little voice thinking. And meditation is like mental gymnastics. There's a number of exercises, and since then I discovered a couple of them, and I'm now very happy to share them.
And you outline in your book all of the extensive research, the benefits and sometimes the downsides that meditation can bring, not only to our mental well-being but also our physical health. But as a neuroscientist, you also point out that it can be hard sometimes to find good studies with all of the relevant controls in place that add up to credible scientific data. So perhaps can I ask you, what do you think are the most profound physical and mental health benefits that studies have credibly shown to flow from meditation?
Well, maybe there's two worlds. One is I would prescribe meditation in patients with chronic pain, with anxiety, with depression, because indeed there are controlled clinical trials showing that the effect of meditation can be as big as that of the medication that I prescribe. And then there's two type of studies. One is the scientific evidence that meditation has an impact on the brain, on the body, the immune system, even level of your chromosomes. And then there is the translation of that to clinical practice. And I think there we need more studies where really we should define the endpoints, the indication, contraindications, side effects. And unfortunately, when I go to conferences, medical conferences, it's still the vast majority about the pharmaceutical interventions. And I would like to see that differently in the future.
Matthieu Licard, the Buddhist monk and scientist who inspired you to look at meditation and mindfulness, he lived with you for a while and you studied his brain in your laboratory and you scanned his brain while he meditated and you also measured the amount of grey matter that his brain has, and he's in his 70s. What did you find?
Well, interestingly, his brain is like 10, 15 years younger, neurologically speaking. And more specifically, in the book, you see the different structures that are just bigger in volume. And we're not going to compare meditation to sport, but somehow, if you start running, you get strong muscles in the legs. If you start swimming, strong and bigger shoulders. And meditation somehow could be compared to that. It's all about attention, right? And it's focusing your attention on one object, breathing, or a mantra you would repeat in your head, or being open to sensory input, or training compassion. And depending on what you do, we really saw in these experts meditating a lot that their gray matter increased, and also that the connectivity, so the strength of your brain, is those billions of nerve cells interacting with each other. And we saw, for example, that the left and the right hemisphere were more interconnected. The highway connecting these both halves of your brain were just bigger. And most importantly, of course, is the observation that you don't need a Buddhist monk. Studies show that if you and I, we start to meditate already after 8 weeks, we can have those visible effects on brain scans.
So these results have been replicated in other individuals, and we don't need to be kind of Olympic standard meditators to have increased gray matter. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. We also observed, next to the structural brain changes, when we injected radioactive sugar and your brain uses a lot of energy, that Matthieu Ricard and these other meditators had a higher metabolic brain activity. So starting age 40, your brain energy use goes down. And meditation, it has been shown repeatedly, can have a positive impact on that normal aging process. And now even in Europe, multicentric studies is trying this out in people who are at risk for dementia.
I, like many people, use meditation apps, particularly to get to sleep. And sometimes it's great. It often does help me go to sleep. But sometimes I feel like, you know, I'm not paying attention to the person who's leading my meditation. And I know others who meditate and their minds just wander. Sometimes with meditation, you can kind of hit a bit of humdrum. You can kind of hit a bit of a plateau. How do you get around that?
Yeah, to me, there's no meditation session that is bad or failed. If it was more challenging because you felt more restlessness or you were distracted the whole time, well, that's fine. You know, it's accepting that there's no good or bad meditation. It's, you know, you do what you can and you appreciate and you observe what's going on in your mind. And if you do that, you kind of have some control. You create some distance between you and your thoughts. You are not your thoughts. And then you can start doing that with your emotions. Trust yourself. You're doing great. Just appreciate that things change and one session will be different from the other.
Mahesh Krupiah Quillen has been teaching meditation and yoga for many years. Originally from Malaysia, she used meditation as a technique there for stress reduction with corporate clients.
So as you tune into your breath, let's start our own breath. Breathing in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and out. Oh. Breathing in 2, 3,
and she's found some simple meditation techniques along the way, like this Om meditation, one of my favourites.
Breathing in, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, breathing out.
Mahesh Krupiah Quillen says some students can encounter real difficulties with meditation, such as feeling very overwhelmed by emotions or just unable to sit still. In these instances, Mahesh says she turns to physical forms of meditation, like yoga.
When the physical body is all knotted up and stressed and tensed, you know how you'll have neck ache and back ache, all of that can be easily taken care of with some yoga practice. That's the physical aspect that I was talking about. So once you get into some of the movements, get some stretching down, some flexibility happening, and getting the body to loosen up, and then you go on to deeper levels. That I find working really well. And with the physical body exercises, not only are you working out, stretching out, flexing out, reducing the tightness and lengthening the muscles, you're also learning to focus as we do the yoga. So we involve the physical body and the mind.
Have you experienced that with students, some who just get really overwhelmed by emotions when they meditate?
Yes.
Mindfulness and meditation, it's become ubiquitous, right? But as we heard, not everyone has a great time meditating. Stephen Lowrez says that controlled clinical trials are monitoring situations where meditators experience adverse impacts. But we also need to be more aware in our own various meditation journeys.
Do you warn against going with just one teacher or following just one approach, and you say you go into alarm mode if you read that a certain method is the only authentic one? And I guess what you're saying there is guard against dogmatism or even cults. But you also say our strictly scientific mindset should not overshadow our sense of spirituality. So it's a complicated journey, right?
Absolutely. It's finding your balance. And I was raised Christian, then went to university and became scientist, everything evidence-based. And when I would see my first child being born, you know, I could explain it biologically. I would see a rainbow, the stars, and we know the physics behind that. And yet, there's a lot we don't know, right? And our ignorance is huge when we talk about the origin of matter, of life, of consciousness, which is my area of expertise. And then I just enjoy the wonder of life. And as a neurologist, of course, working in intensive care, confronted with dying people and the most catastrophic brain injuries after trauma, makes you realize how fortunate we are and how really we should enjoy the moment.
Stephen Lowrez says that when he's struggling with his meditation practice, he tries to mix it up, do something different. And so in the spirit of trying something different, Mahesh Krupiah Quillen holds regular laughter yoga classes. And Mahesh maintains that, yes, this is also a form of meditation.
When you're laughing, I say this is the only phenomenon in the human body where sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system come together. Sympathetic meaning rah-rah, go-go, the active more, and the parasympathetic, which is the rest, digest, the relax more. And when they come together, it's like a technique called soul hum. So putting your palms up, pressing it against the air front. So is pressing the palm forward in front of you, and hum is pressing the palm downwards away from you. So and hum down.
Hum.
Yep.
So
hum.
Hum.
So
hum.
Hum.
So
hum.
Hum.
So hum.
So
hum.
So
hum.
So hum.
So hum.
So hum.
So hum.
So hum.
So hum. So hum. And stop and laugh.
I can't believe that worked, says Erica Vowles, but it did. Mahesh Krupiakwilan, and before that, Professor Stephen Lowrez speaking with Erica Vowles.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.